Welcome to Bestsellers. I'm Natalie Jameson.
And I'm Phil Williams.
And we're doing something a bit new for this one because we read a lot. We hope that you're reading a lot from the great recommendations that you've been enjoying this season, but it's impossible to like read everything, right? So there's a thing that if you've listened to some of our podcasts, if you've heard authors speak before, you may hear them talking about their TBR pile. Now, I'm somebody who doesn't particularly like acronyms. Is that what you call it when it's condensed things?
I once, in a BBC meeting, I once said, I'm sorry, I don't understand that. You're using too many TLAs for me. And they said, too many what? And I said, exactly. It's not nice, is it, when you don't know the acronym? I said, TLAs, three-letter abbreviations.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically what they are.
Exactly. So to be read pile is something that most writers, authors, avid readers will have, which is that thing where you've gone into a bookshop or you've gone on your e-reader device and you've just like bought a stack of those 99p bargains, or your favorite authors have come out, or you know, those tables that you get at the front of bookshops that are so effective, I think, that you can just browse through and go, oh, I love the sound of that one, and you pick them up but you haven't got around to reading them. So we thought for this episode, Phil and I will take you through some of our summer to be read books that we really want to get stuck into. So we haven't read these yet, but we'll tell you about them. We'll tell you why they have enticed us to get them, to want to read them. So do you want to kick off?
Yeah, okay. We should just say that this pile, it's a bit like a to-do list. It never goes down, does it?
Because
you put a dent in it.
Not that it's a bad problem to have.
Top of it. So don't ever think about your TBR pile, right? That's a job that I must complete, because you'll never complete it. There'll always be additions to it.
Just before you get into your first one as well, I think we don't often talk about it as much with books as we do with other forms of entertainment, like movies or songs, that you may have bought a book and you know you want to read it, but you're just not in the mood on that day to pick up that like historical drama epic. You actually just want the one that's sort of sunny, that if that matches the weather on the day, whatever it is, you have to go by your mood as well.
The other thing I've had just on that theme that recently, I've had a couple of people, including one writer, said to me, what, you read three books at the same time? And I said, yeah. And they go, does that not blow your mind? How do you know which plot is which? So I say to them, how many TV shows are you binging at the moment?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, there's this and this. And to me, there's no difference.
No.
I've got three on the go. So at the moment, one's a biography, so that's different. One's quite a nice romantic book, and the other's a crime book. So depending on the mood that you just mentioned, I can go, I need a crime chapter tonight. I need a heist. Or, I need something a bit softer than that. I'll go for the romantic book I'm reading. Oh, actually, you know what? I'm in the mood to just concentrate on a bit of past history, so I'll go for the biography.
Yeah, and it's the same as well with dipping back into a book. And I do the same. I have various ones on the go as well. And it might be like when you first open it, that sentence, you're like, where am I again? What is this? But again, it's the same as if you're watching a series. It doesn't take you long to get back into that. Oh, yeah, I've got it now. Yeah, I remember that character. I know where I am. Your kind of brain does catch up.
Right, I'm going to give you my first book then.
Okay.
And it's a monster, but it's really easy to read because it's mostly a picture book. And this came out in June, I think, was when I got my copy. It's Paul McCartney, 1964, Eyes of the Storm. I haven't mentioned it on this podcast before, but now I've got it before me. It's a coffee table book. It's huge. It's glossy. It's beautiful. A lot of these photos have found their way to the National Portrait Gallery in London, so you may have been fortunate enough to go and see these. And just to give you a sense of this, I'm just going to read what Mac has written in the foreword. So he says, these photos were taken over an intense three-month period of travel, culminating in February 1964. It was a wonderful sensation because they plunged me right back. Here was my own record of our first huge trip, a photographic journal of the Beatles in six cities, beginning in Liverpool and London, followed by Paris, where John and I had been ordinary hitchhikers just over 2 years before, and then what we regard as the big time, our first visit as a group to America, New York, Washington, and Miami, to the land where, at least in our minds, music's future was being born. Who doesn't want to read that, right?
And look at the pictures, obviously.
Yeah. So, and the pictures are phenomenal. And I showed this to my seven-year-old, and you know what the best bit was? Is that because he's only seven, he was like, so which film is this, Dad? And I said, this isn't a film. This is someone's life. This happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that blew his mind. And I think that's why I wanted this book.
Yeah. Oh, that does sound lovely. And how precious are you with it, with your seven-year-old? You're like, no, don't put your fingers. Have you just like eaten a snack? Don't touch that page.
Oh, yeah. He's not touching it. And he's going nowhere near it unless I'm supervising. Yeah. This lives in my room. But yeah,
it's hard,
it's very,
isn't it?
Very gorgeous. And yeah, I mean, it's not cheap, I should point out. I think my copy was £45, which is cheaper than retail.
Really?
Retail's 65 quid.
What?
Yeah, it's expensive. But it's
that might explain why it hasn't particularly been on my radar and I have not bought that yet.
Yeah. The price on the back cover is 60 quid.
Wow.
So you shop around, you can get it a bit cheaper. But it's naughty money, but it's worth it. I felt like I was buying a historical artifact that would live on beyond me, do you know what I mean? And that hopefully my children will inherit.
Yeah, and I do, you know, it's easy to balk at the cost of that book, obviously, this particular time with so much else going on, cost of living crisis, etc. But yeah, you're right. It is a beautiful work of art and you've kind of got to think of it like that, right? And it's if you have got any, you know, birthdays or any celebrations coming up, that's the type of book that will be a nice thing to put on a gift list, right?
Well, also, I remember I was quite into history at school. And one of the things that frustrated me about history was that sometimes there'd be certain periods you'd be studying and there'd be no primary evidence, as in no first-hand sources.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a man who, at time of recording, is still alive, who's put together a book of his personal photographs at a time when one of the biggest bands ever in the history of the world were breaking America. So why would you not want that first-hand account? Do you know what I mean? If you can afford it and stretch to it, it's primary evidence of a critical time in popular culture.
Yeah.
That was the appeal for me.
By one of the main players.
Yeah. And soon those sources won't be available to us. So let's use them while they're there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to look at that then after this. Right. My first book is The Invisible Hour by Alice Hoffman.
You love Alice Hoffman, don't you?
I do love Alice
Hoffman. I don't say that. I'm not taking the mickey in it. Mm. I just know that from working with you on this podcast, it's a name I'm familiar with, even though I've never picked up an Alice Hoffman book.
I know that name. Because I keep banging on about it.
You, yeah.
Well, she's got this new book that's coming out. It's not coming out for another couple of weeks yet, 17th of August, so this summer. But you can pre-order it now. And hopefully this will help sell it to you as well, Phil, because the praise on...
Have you read it already?
I haven't read it. No, I haven't started it yet. I've got it here in my hands. Wow. But I've got it's coming up. I've got a couple of days.
That's the closest you ever get to Neville Chamberlain. I have in my hands an Alice Hoffman.
I've got a few days off coming up and I've been saving it for that.
Oh, is that your treat to you?
This is my treat to me because I want to read it uninterrupted. I want to just, yeah, this is, because that's the thing about Alice Hoffman's stories. If you've never heard of her before, if you haven't sampled any of her books, she writes in such a beautiful way that there's a touch of magical realism in her stories, which means that they're very much grounded in reality. So they'll tell you stories about, you know, their romantic dramas. Sometimes they're funny. They are often quite emotional, but in a really compelling way. But she'll just stretch the edges of reality. So if somebody is recounting a story, there'll just be something that kind of takes it that little bit further that you're like, did that really happen? Was that a dream? What was it? So yeah, the quote on the front cover of this book is from Stephen King, who just writes a wonderful story of love and growth. And there are so many plaudits from incredible authors like Toni Morrison has written one for this. Beautiful, harrowing, a major contribution to 21st century literature. Elizabeth Strout has written a quote as well. So is Jodi Picco. These are all kind of praise for Alice Hoffman's work, body of work, because she's written so many fantastic books, really. There was one called The Dove Keepers, which I think is the one that Toni Morrison was talking about there, which actually I haven't read from hers either. But Alice Hoffman did the Practical Magic series. The kind of gateway for me was a book called Turtle Moon. And this one, let me just tell you what it is about. Hold on, let me get the blurb. It says, this is an enchanting novel about love, heartbreak, self-discovery, and the enduring magic of books. 16-year-old Ivy is pregnant and alone. Cast out by her family, she runs away and finds safety in the arms of Joel Davis. He offers a simpler life than the one she had in Boston, a quiet, rural life of rules, peace, and community. Little does she realize, Joel is the charismatic leader of a cult known as the Community, and all is not quite as it seems.
And tell me about Alice Hoffman. Is she a book a year person? Or do you have to wait quite a while for these? Do they not come around very often?
I haven't kind of checked her back catalogue. She is quite prolific. I don't know if she is as much as a book a year, but she's written 23 novels. Tends to not do series. So Practical Magic was a series, and she's kind of gone back and done prequels to that. So The Book of Magic was the latest prequel of that that came out. But she often does standalone stories, often set in America, often looking at the disparity between often women in society sometimes, but kind of all walks of life, all cultures. She's just a really fascinating author, and I love her storytelling. So that is my first pick, Alice Hoffman, The Invisible Hour.
Okay, for my second one, it's the follow-up to a debut that I absolutely loved last year. And you know, sometimes, Nat, when a book just lands on your lap at the right time. So mm-hmm. We were going away for Easter. So this is 2022, right? And this proof arrives in the post. A guy I'd never heard of, John Brownlow, and it's called 17. I thought, you know what? I can take this away. I can stick it in hand luggage, because I always like, I don't know if I ever discussed this with you, but if I'm going away on a flight,
yeah,
I like a physical book in hand luggage, because they don't let you read your tablet for takeoff and landing.
Mm-hmm.
So I need a physical. So mostly I'll take several books all on a tablet, but I like one physical that I can stick in. So on this year's holiday, it was Bono. Last year, it was 17 by John Brownlow. And the follow-up is called Assassin 18, right? So we'll get to that in a minute. I'll clue you up on that, because I've not touched that yet. But with 17, well, first of all, let me tell you a bit about John. John's a screenwriter. So if you saw Gwyneth Paltrow play Sylvia Plath, then yeah. In the film Sylvia, John wrote that screenplay. John also wrote the screenplay for The Miniaturist, which is the Jesse Burton novel that I think was on the BBC.
It was, yep. Yeah.
So this is his first, 17 was his first novel. And it's all about a hitman who's the best in the world. So-called because he's the 17th person in history who's achieved this accolade. Every government organization wants his services, but every other high-level hitman has placed a target on his back. And when you join this, someone's trying to take out 17, and you don't know who, and 17 doesn't know who, and you never find out who 17 is throughout the entirety of the novel. Right? But it's a really good thriller. It's real breakneck pace. So I can't wait to tuck into the sequel now. The description for the sequel for Assassin 18 is, well, the tagline says, "I'm waiting for someone to kill me. Tonight would be a good night for it." That was it. and apparently I just did a bit of reading before I came on the pod to talk to you, and it's a two-book deal that Hodder have signed. I think film rights have gone already, and you can see these being kind of a rival to Jason Bourne and James Bond, and kind of being a more modern version of both. Yeah. So that's where these stories are. Ooh. So I can't wait to read this. I tweeted like mad about 17 last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much pickup that got, but I think I've already seen Assassin 18 in Waterstones and places like that. So it's already kind of feels like it's making a bigger splash, but I haven't started it yet. That's on my tablet to download and tuck into.
That sounds great. And it sounds like it's really proper page turnery stuff.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it really is. And it's very cinematic. You can really imagine the action sequences are superb. And it's way more, it's not like sometimes when you describe these books, there are different, there's a scale of action, I think, and you can have quite A-teamy action. It's more than that. It's way cleverer than that. Do you know what I mean? So it's not just action for the sake of it. But it's not espionage. It's not John Le Carre. It's just full throttle. It's a bit like, did you read I Am Pilgrim, Terry Hayes?
I didn't know, but you've mentioned that before. That is ringing some distant bells. Yeah,
it's a bit like that. It's where you think, oh, I'll just do one chapter, and then you think, I've got to do that. Okay, I can't leave it there. And he keeps making you read another chapter. So Assassin 18, John Brownlow. Just on Terry Hayes, we need to pin that man down. He's got a new book coming in November, and he hasn't done a new book since I Am Pilgrim. So we need to keep an eye out for that. And also, while we're doing breaking book news, because this is how my mind flits around. I just got some good news that Michael Connelly's next book, which lands in the autumn, is going to be a Mickey Haller and Harry Bosch. So he's putting the Lincoln Lawyer with Bosch. He's done it before, but he hasn't done it for a while. And so that's going to be terrific, because whenever they team up, the humour in those books, as well as the kind of thriller narrative, superb. So I can't wait for that.
That does sound good. Right. This is a bit of a tangent, possibly, for my
second. Are you turning left without indicating?
I don't do that. Oh, that really bugs me. I tell you what, when I'm driving, people who don't indicate, I think if there's one phrase that my kids have heard in the car more than any others, even swear words, it's probably like, I can't mind read where you're going. Because I just hate that. Awful. Anyway.
I just meant metaphorically.
Yes, I know. I know. But it, you know. Again, you know how my brain works too. So my second book that is on my TBR, my to be read pile, is a book called Sea Change by Gina Chung. And again, this is coming out in the next couple of weeks, 10th of August, this is out. And I haven't read any of her writing before at all. I think it might, it's her debut. It's her first novel, so that's all good. And Gina Chung is a Korean-American writer from New Jersey, currently living in New York. She's got some really good credits of various creative writing prizes that she's won. But let me just read you. I love the cover of this book as well. It is a gorgeous sort of like teal green color with a pink and red octopus design on it. I'm holding it up for you to have a look. Very pretty.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I can see that now.
And
nice silver kind of effect
Beautiful.
For the title,
so I don't know how you're going to react to the blurb on this, but I'm willing to give it a try. It hooked me in.
Go then.
Ro is heartbroken. Her long-term boyfriend has accepted a one-way ticket on a mission to colonize Mars. Her best friend is too busy to notice. Her only consolation is Dolores, the magnificent giant Pacific octopus her father brought to Rose Aquarium before he disappeared 15 years ago. When the aquarium announces that Dolores is to be sold, Ro self-destructs. Can Dolores help her through the storm?
Hang on. You're going to have to talk me. Let me tell you what I understood about that.
Yeah.
There's a girl whose boyfriend's disappearing to Mars.
Yeah.
And the only thing that gives her solace is a pet octopus.
Yeah. Well, it's not a, it's an octopus that's in an aquarium that she runs.
Okay. And then they want to sell the octopus.
They do, but her dad mysteriously disappeared 15 years ago. There's a bit more actually on this sheet. Let me read you this bit. Her only consolation is Dolores, the magnificent giant Pacific octopus her father brought to the aquarium where Ro now works before he mysteriously disappeared 15 years ago. Dolores can change into colors no one's ever seen before. She comes from the deepest part of the Bering Strait where conditions are hostile to life. She is the only thing, or so Ro thinks, that connects her to her missing father.
Okay, so at first I thought it was a story of abandonment, you know, with the fella and the octopus going. Yeah. But actually, it sounds like more of a mystery to do with the dad.
Yeah, got no idea, but I'm kind of intrigued.
Interesting. How are you spelling Ro?
R-O.
Okay. If it turns out that Ro's a fish, you can stick it.
I don't think it is going to be that.
Okay.
I don't think it is.
Also, where this fascination with sea stories come from for you? You've just gone nuts over Sharkheart, and now you want to read this one.
Well, I think it was because I really have started enjoying Sharkheart very much. And hopefully we might be able to chat to Emily Harbeck on this podcast. But yeah, Sharkheart was recommended to us. Who recommended it? I can't remember now.
I think it was Cecilia, was it?
I think it was Cecilia Rebess, who wrote Everything's Fine. I think she recommended Sharkheart. And it's such a beautiful story. I'm loving that one. So yeah, maybe it is. So that's what has drawn me to Sea Change. But I kind of did.
You know, I'm such a juvenile, right?
Yeah.
Every time you say shark heart, I hear shark heart.
Do you? You are such a juvenile.
And I can't get past it.
But also I love that thing, not to digress too much. People have lives to live, days to get on with. I just kind of like that I don't know anything about colonizing Mars. I don't know anything really about
octopuses. You must have seen The Martian.
Yeah, I have, but that's it. I've read Andy Weir's books.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But that's what I'm trying to say is that I love sometimes just picking up a book that on the face of it may be like, this has nothing to do with me. I don't know why I'm interested, but I think I'm interested because it's so out there.
How did that book reach you?
How did it reach me? Good question. I can't remember if I saw it or if somebody, a lovely publicity person who I was messaging and probably saying something about Shark Heart, might have said, oh, you might be interested in Sea Change.
Right, okay. That's why I was asking you to see if there's like a link or just
random. Might be a link. Yeah.
There's nothing nicer sometimes than when a random lands in the post is when you try it and you're like, this is ace.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you haven't started that.
Haven't started that yet.
Okay. I'll be intrigued to know.
I will report back.
My jury's out. Could go either way on that. Right. So my next pick then. Again, this book is out now. I've seen this in the in bookshop. In fact, I saw it at the weekend in Waterstones. Have you ever read a Philip Marlowe book?
No, I haven't.
But you know who I mean, don't you?
The Private Eye. Classic detective, yeah.
Exactly, Raymond Chandler. I haven't either, right? And I feel like it's something I should put right. Almost every good crime writer we interview loves Chandler. So a bit like the Fleming Bond books where they now authorise people. We've done Anthony Horowitz, haven't we, for a new authorised Bond.
Yeah.
So Denise Minor, who I met at Harrogate several years ago when I was doing an outside broadcast, she's been authorised to write a Philip Marlowe mystery called The Second Murderer, right? And James Patterson says Denise Minor is one of a kind storyteller. She's high praise indeed from him. And there's a bit of kind of dialogue from the book that I was going to read that just promotes them. So this is on the back sleeve. This isn't like, I'm not delved into it for this. This is Marlowe. Mr. Philip Marlowe, she asked. I glanced at the clock. It was exactly 11 a.m. as if she had been waiting by the phone for an appointed hour following someone else's orders to the letter. What? Do you think we're a troop of brothers? There is only me. Quite like that. Quite like the attitude of Marlowe.
Yeah.
So the blurb for this said it's mid-September. A heat wave descended on the parched hills of LA, and private detective Philip Marlowe is called to the Montgomery estate, an almost mythic place sitting high on top of Beverly Hills. Wealthy 22-year-old Chrissy Montgomery, set to inherit an enormous fortune, is missing. She's a walking target, ripe for someone to get their claws into. Her dying father, along with his sultry bottle blonde girlfriend, wants her found before that happens. They've hired Anna Reardon, Marlowe's nemesis, too. The search takes him to the roughest neighborhoods of LA through dive bars and Skid Row, and that's before he finds the body at the Brody Hotel. Who will get to her first, Marlowe, Anne, or the men chasing her fortune? And does she want to be found? Sounds great. So it's a brand new Philip Marlowe mystery from Denise Minor, M-I-N-A, and it's called The Second Murderer.
Sounds fascinating.
Brave as well, isn't it, I think? I think it's always brave. You step into, you know, Fleming's boots, stepping into Chandler's boots. It's a brave thing to do. Didn't we speak to Ian Rankin, who'd done this as well with a William McIlvany? He'd finished a William McIlvany manuscript for one of McIlvany's characters. And yeah, I think it's a brave thing to do, especially when everyone, you know, you and I have never read a Marlowe, but so fond. People have a fond placing for these things, don't they?
They do.
So, so I'm intrigued to read that. And I've read one of Denise's books before and it was superb. So I'm in. I'm all in once I get 5 minutes.
Nice. And then the third book that I will mention today is Sad Girl Novel. And this is a debut again by an author called Pip Finkmeyer. This also comes out on the 10th of August. And I'll read you the blurb on this one. It says, an Australian expat in Berlin, Kim is jobless, rootless, and, as she's slowly discovering, somewhat useless. That is, until a chance encounter with Matthew, a hotshot New York literary agent, gives her the direction she's been craving. This year, she will finally write her novel, decide what said novel is actually about, romantically pin down the increasingly flighty Matthew, be less jealous of best friend Belle's baby, convince her therapist that the amount of artichokes she eats doesn't classify as an eating disorder, stay sane in the process of achieving the above, because Kim's story will not become a sad girl novel. Definitely not.
Okay, I know why you like that.
Is that because I'm also writing a novel and I need to decide what said novel is actually about?
Yeah, but let's hope you don't meet the agent of your dreams and fall head over heels in love with him, given that you're happily married.
Exactly. No, that bit's fine. Just the writing bit. Yeah, it sounds great, right? It sounds just like a really lovely romantic comedy. So,
It sounds fun, is what it sounds.
exactly.
And sometimes there aren't enough fun books, are there?
So that is, and it sounds funny as well. So not just fun, like enjoyable, but comedy too. And, comedy writing is also really difficult and often doesn't get the attention it deserves. So I am very much looking forward to diving into this one too, and hopefully laughing.
Give us the title again.
This is called Sad Girl Novel, and it's by Pip Finkmeyer. And Finkmeyer is spelt Finkmeyer, and it's an Australian author.
Nice. I've got one more. Have
Okay.
you got? Can I do one more?
You can, greedy.
This one, I cannot wait to buy. It's out on the 5th of September. It's from a writer who doesn't really need our attention. Because he's probably the world's most famous writer right now. But Stephen King, known for his horror,
I was about to say, is it Stephen King? It's Stephen King.
did a detective trilogy, which I loved, because I'm not really a horror fan, but I wanted to read some of his work. So he did a book called Mr. Mercedes, and then Finders Keepers and The Outsider were all in that series. And the detective isn't in this. No spoilers. But in the first book, he recruits a kind of an assistant who is, I think it's fair to say, neurodiverse, called Holly Gibney. I don't think there's any spoiler in telling you about the neurodiverse, but you kind of pick that up quite early on. So Stephen King's new book is simply called Holly, and it is her own adventure. It's the first time she's had her own solo book adventure. Although obviously she was a key part in The Outsider as well. So in the new novel, Holly's on her own, up against a pair of unimaginably depraved and brilliantly disguised adversaries. When Penny Dahl calls the Finders Keepers detective agency, hoping for help locating her missing daughter, Holly's reluctant to accept the case. Her partner Pete has COVID, her very complicated mother has just died, and Holly's meant to be on leave, but something in Penny Dahl's desperate voice makes it impossible for Holly to turn her down. And I just know that book's going to be brilliant because all of those. Have you read any of those?
No, I haven't.
They're really, really good. They're really brilliant, really brilliantly written, and build to a nice crescendo of drama. And The Outsider, I think I saw that on Sky Atlantic. I think they did actually dramatize that.
Ah, okay.
It's
Nice.
quite, that's really spooky, really spooky, The Outsider. So yeah, that's out 5th of September, Holly, brand new from Stephen King.
That sounds great too. There's so many good things, aren't there?
Which is
It's
great.
like
We're being spoiled.
we are. I have like so many other books on my TBR pile. That I won't go into now. But
Can I
yeah, I
ask
just.
you one more question about your
Yeah.
TBR pile? Because you started by defining it and what it is and all the rest of it.
Yes.
Can I ask you where yours lives?
So mine lives on. I have. So some are on my Kindle.
Right.
So I have some stacked up on my Kindle, which is quite disorganized. I find it quite hard to organize what I want to read next. I know you can do folders and stuff and things on there, but I'm just not very good at doing that. And then
Right.
the physical books, so the ones that I just showed you on
Yeah.
screen here, apologies for you
Those
listening,
are you
not being
watching
able
in
to see
black and
them.
white?
I do have a bookcase next to my bed.
Okay. So I have a pile next to the bed, which was one pile of books going up the wall, but then it reached the windowsill, so now it's a second pile. That's for the physicals. And then digitally, I split between Apple's iBooks and then this service for journalists like us called NetGalley, where you can
Yes.
sometimes get preview digital copies of books. So, but I agree with you. Digitally, it's a lot harder to organize because sometimes you can add stuff to your want to read list. But then, if the more you add, the more the first one gets shunted down the line. And unless you
Exactly.
scroll all the way back down, out of sight, out of mind can sometimes be a factor. Whereas when I'm staring up against the bedroom wall to my right,
Can
I can
see
go,
them.
like, for example, I've just looked now and that beautiful Paul Newman biography that you recommended
Yes.
is there. And I've bought that. I must have bought it whenever you recommended it and still not got a chance to read it. So it's things like that where you get a must read that. And actually, I've not got any holidays coming up, but if I did, I think that would be my holiday treat in the way that the
Yeah.
Alice Hoffman is yours.
Yeah. Right. Well,
Good
we hope.
insight into TBRs. Well done. That was
Thanks
your
very
idea
much.
for coming up with
It
that. And I
was.
thought, yeah, it's like you're right to do that. Hopefully, we don't do it too much, but occasionally you can be guilty of falling into trade jargon.
Yes.
And it's always
Yeah.
worth explaining and demystifying.
It is, because nobody likes feeling like they're not in on the joke or, you know, whatever the chat is, you know, so I hate that. So yeah, so this was our TBR, our To Be Read summer edition. I'm sure there'll be more of these to come as well, which again, I just hope gives anybody listening a wider variety of stories to choose from, because there are so many books we know out there. And sometimes it's just nice to hear from ones that you may not have naturally gravitated towards.
And also, there's no guarantee these will get read.
No.
Either. That's the other thing. Because like I said about the Paul Newman book, you know, I've had that for, I reckon you mentioned that to me at Christmas.
Yeah, I did. Say.
Mm-hmm. And we're now recording in July. So yeah, it's not, there's no guarantee of that. It's more that at least if we get a chance to draw these to your attention, they might pique your interest. That's the other thing. Sometimes we can only talk to you about the books that we've read so that we can interview the authors. But actually some of these are like, oh yeah, that sounds great. We haven't had a chance to dip in, but you might like to. And hopefully we can increase the pool of available books then that we think you'll be interested in.
Yeah, and do let us know if you have read any of these ones that we've mentioned in this episode, or what stories and authors you're loving. How can they do that, Phil?
In sports parlance, we call that a hospital pass. It's bestsellerspodcast@gmail.com if you want to email us. bestsellerspodcast@gmail.com. Or, which I've now got rooted into my inbox, by the way, so I won't miss your email now like I might have done before. Or you can go to Ko-fi where we're at.
I can do this one.
Go on then.
Because it was my mission, wasn't it, that I had to remember how to do it. So you can go to Ko-fi, so K-O hyphen.
She's reading it.
fi.com/bestsellerspodcast.
It's a start, isn't it? It's a start. It No, your next thing is to memorize it.
Okay. I've clicked off the screen.
Okay.
Ko-fi, ko-fi.com.
God damn it. Who put a question mark on Natalie's teleprompter?
Yeah. ko-fi.com/bestsellerspodcast.
You can buy some metaphorical coffee there, but you don't just have to do that. You can converse with us there as well. And we do see messages and notes and episodes you've loved, or books you've loved, books you'd like us to go after, those kind of things. Fully interactive service there at ko-fi.com/bestsellerspodcast.
Yeah, and enjoy. Love to hear about your TBR piles as well, if you have them. Yeah, happy reading.
We'll be back soon with more books and more writers.